All right, welcome back into the Gary Sharp Show. Producer Josh with us. Max Olson from The Athletic joins us now on the Lanahan Nurseries Hotline. Good afternoon, Max. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Let's first start. We'll dive into halfway through the college football season and all the other pettiness that is going on. You and Mitch wrote a fantastic, let's look back at a very ugly time for Nebraska football fans in the search to track down Bill Callahan and bring him to Lincoln. Has your opinion changed? So you write the story, and you knew of the story when it was going on back in 2003. Anything changed from what you thought at the time to, 18 years later, about what a mess that was?
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing it up. I think it was a lot of fun to work on over the past month and really dig into all the old newspapers at the time and all the old commentary of what was going on, and sort of you saw the frustration and confusion and angst build up over that whole period of time, as you had, a first year AD trying to make his big mark on the program, and feeling very confident at the start of the search that he could lure this home run higher. And plan A didn't work, plan B didn't work, and neither did plan C. It's really striking to go through, and obviously, look, we all know that Steve Peterson gets villainized for all this, and we didn't get to talk to him, and I'm sure he has his own take on why things went the way they did. But I think the thing that was striking to me, I assume when I look back on that time, I wondered maybe a lot of coaches were just turned off by the idea that, oh, you just fired a 9-3 coach. Why would I go to a place as great as Nebraska is? Why would I go to a place that just fired a 9-3 coach? That makes me think that, that's not a very smart move on my part. And the coaches I talked to really were not intimidated by that. They really weren't turned off by that so much. And they even weren't, the coaches that interviewed for the job weren't even really turned off by Steve Peterson, other than maybe Houston Nutt a little bit. I think that it sometimes with these coaching searches, it can really just all come down to timing. And at the time, these folks that they went after, I think they may have just gone after the wrong people. They respected Nebraska. They respected that this was, certainly at the time, one of the best jobs in the country. But timing factors into all this, and the people they went after, it just wasn't the right time for them to leave. And that put Steve Peterson and Harvey Perlman in a really tough spot there where, Bill Callahan fell into their lap, and he was close enough to the person they originally wanted to hire that they said, okay, let's go with this.
Why do you think he was obsessed with NFL guys?
That was something I kind of asked a lot of people in working on this, because I wondered that too. I think that, not to oversimplify, but I think he probably believed that he could find the next Pete Carroll, that he could find the pro coach that comes in. And he really believed Nebraska needed to be at a higher level in recruiting. He was going after pro coaches who, would come in and bring pro systems, and would help you recruit more blue chip players, because you could sell them that, hey, this system's going to get you to the pros. And so that, I think that was the thinking at the time, that, you weren't going to win the Big 12 anymore with just running the ball and playing great defense. And you wanted, a higher caliber of recruit, which certainly we saw. Yep. Bill Callahan was able to achieve that. But I think that it's a great question, because you're thinking, like, there had to be some good college coaches at the time. They would have taken this job and wouldn't have torn the whole thing down.
You have been through this enough, your time in Austin, where you see coaching searches. And we have a high-profile job that is open, USC. And there could be another one in the SEC with LSU. The athletic director is a little bit of a wild card. But as you work on this piece and you followed how these work, what is in the DNA of an athletic director that must be good when they're doing these searches? I know they have search firms, but at the end of the day, you pay an athletic director a lot of money to make a decision on his football coach that he's hiring. What makes an athletic director good and qualified that he can make the right hire?
Yeah, it's a tremendous question. And, I think that from talking to ADs, for other stories and stuff, one thing that comes up, and it's cliche, but they really do kind of live by it. They do believe it's true, is that you do kind of always have that list in your head, or you keep that list in the drawer of your desk there of, if this job ever came open, these would be the people I'd go after. But I think part of being a successful AD and a really sharp one is through the course of, working in that industry, I think you need to build relationships with these guys so that you, when you put names on your list, you know you can get them. You know that you have a good trust there. That, hey, if this job ever opened up, I'm going to call these guys. I really like these guys. I know them. I've done my homework on them. They like me. They would take the job. Like, I think you have, there's a level of preparation to this that you kind of have to maintain. And it's not out of, like, disrespect of your current head coach or anything like that. You can't spend all your time chasing other people when you've got one. But I think that there is, like, you have to go into a search with a very realistic understanding of what your job is, what you can offer, how to pitch this job to people. And, you know, I think that what you learned from the Peterson one for sure is, you know, when you have a plan A, it better be a realistic one too, because his plan A was that he thought that he could get Mike Sherman to leave the Green Bay Packers and take over Nebraska. And at that point in time, Mike Sherman is in the middle of the football season. He's making, you know, close to three times what Frank Solich was making. He's already the GM and executive VP of the Packers. He'd been, you know, been in the playoffs the past few years. He wasn't on the hot seat or anything. So it's just, what, even if Mike Sherman respected the job and was intrigued and all that, he wasn't leaving. So you also have to have a, you know, as much as you want to swing for the fences and wow everybody, it's also got to be attainable.
Max Olson from The Athletic joining us here on the Gary Sharp Show. Why do you think this has been such a crazy football season?
You know, like, we expected that last year. We expected, oh, you know, with everything going on, all the clouds kind of hanging over the season, you know, the late start for a bunch of leagues, we expected it to be pretty weird. I don't know why we've seen so many upsets so far this season. I do think that if you look at the teams that are succeeding, you know, you do see more veteran teams, and I think maybe that super senior kind of benefit this year kicks in for some of these schools where, you know, if you were able to bring back a lot of players that you weren't expecting to bring back this year, I think we've seen that with, like, Nebraska defense this year, for example, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when you've got that veteran group, when you've got guys that came back that were willing to put in, you know, another year at your school, it can make a big difference in terms of just how you play. And I do think some of the schools we've seen rise up have benefited from that. But I don't know. I think we're also kind of hitting just at a time. Like, I went to Alabama, Texas A&M this last weekend, and Alabama looked to me like a team that was just kind of a year away in terms of their players, you know, development. They've got young guys, very talented guys, obviously, but I think you'd say that about them. You'd probably say it about Clemson. I think there's a few schools right now that are just, you know, they're still very talented, but between the quarterback change and you know, all the guys you lose to the NFL, there's going to be these years sometimes when you're just not as stacked as you usually are.
How do you explain that game? You just explained Alabama, and I'm with you. But how do you explain Texas A&M doing what they did in a game in which they gave up a block punt for a touchdown? They also returned a kickoff for a touchdown. They were out-yarded by a lot, and they still found a way at the end to win the game. How do you explain Texas A&M?
Oh, I you know, that's one of those games where you're like, I don't even know if I'm going to see this from A&M the rest of the season. It's just kind of that one perfect night when everything lines up, and that's why we love this sport. Yeah. You know, I'm sure there's some folks that didn't want to go to that game thinking, we're about to get our butts kicked by Alabama. We're going to have a three-game losing streak. I don't want to see that. Like, I'm sure. But that's why you go. That's why you still play the game, because you never know. And certainly, you know, A&M got some very talented players. Jimbo Fisher's built a good roster there. But he, like, to his credit, he had a heck of a plan. He really figured out some of Alabama's weaknesses and hit them hard in the first half. His quarterback, he had him ready to play the game of his life, and a week earlier he was so bad against Mississippi State, Zach Calzada was, that there are people on their message board saying he's the worst Aggie quarterback of my lifetime. So it's just amazing in the sport how quickly things can flip in one game, and you know, people want to boo you one week and you know, are storming the field with you the next week. But it's crazy that they're just talented enough, and they had a great plan, and I think Nick Saban was also just a little bit too conservative in that game.
Is anybody going to beat Georgia or score on Georgia?
Score on Georgia, no, probably not. I mean, I think that Kirby Smart has built just a phenomenal defense there. You know, eight of their starters in that group this year were top 50 recruits, and all but one of them that are starting on that defense are juniors or seniors. Like, it is, you know, one of the best defenses I've seen in quite a while. And, you know, they, even with the quarterback issues they've had, they're fine. They're getting away with it because, you know, they can – they're not giving up any points, and they can just run the ball with four really talented backs they have, and really beat up on people. So no, I think that they're a playoff team, and honestly, I'd be surprised. I think if Alabama fought back into this and got into the playoff over them.
How would you describe? We were just talking about how crazy a year it is. How would you describe how crazy a year it is for quarterbacks, for example, Max? If we look at the ACC, we're supposed to be talking about DJU and De'Eriq King and Sam Howell.
Yeah.
And we're talking Kenny Pickett out of Pittsburgh might be the best quarterback in the ACC. Spencer Rattler is fighting for his job and may have lost it to a true freshman who didn't even play high school football last year because of COVID and you couldn't play in D.C. I look across college football. I mean, the Adrian Martinez and the Tanner Morgans, who are, you know, four-year guys, are so rare. How would you sum up what has happened to the quarterback this year in 2021 in the first half of the season?
Oh, my gosh. I was just looking at the stats on this stuff because we're putting together our list for, you know, like the midseason All-America teams and stuff. And Adrian's like in the top 10 in a lot of these quarterback stats right now. I'm impressed by what he's done in terms of his total yardage and all that. But, I mean, you're looking at it, it's like, I mean, Matt Corral, Kenny Pickett, Malik Willis, like, I'm not, like, who are like the All-American guys at this point? Mm-hmm. It feels very wide open, and certainly a lot of them are shocking. I thought Keaton Slovis would have a great year at USC, and that obviously that season is in shambles now. De'Eriq King, one of the most exciting and veteran players in the country. Another season-ending injury for him is horrible to see. You've got the Spencer Rattler thing, I just never would have seen coming. As good as Caleb Williams is, and obviously we saw it against Texas, and he's the number one recruit in the country for a reason. But no, they had it all set up where Spencer Rattler is going to go be the guy this year, go to New York, be the number one pick, all that, and then Williams can do it next year. But in the moment of truth there against Texas, Lincoln Riley goes with the freshman. So really, really, just unbelievable. Yeah, DJ struggles. You wouldn't expect that. Sam Howell struggles. Like, it's just. It looked like an awesome year for QBs, and it's just all over the place right now.
Who do you think is the best team in the Big Ten, and do you think a month from now it will still be the best team in the Big Ten?
I know this is kind of cheating, but, like, I think Ohio State will still end up being the best team in the East. I think so. They still have to keep kind of building that up, and certainly we'll find out here at the end of the month against Penn State. And that's obviously just a decisive game that, it goes a long way towards setting who gets to the end there. But I've seen this Iowa team live. I respect the hell out of what they do on defense. It was like almost a little bit aggravating watching that fourth quarter last week, knowing that Penn State's backup QB had no chance. Cause I think if Sean Clifford finishes that game, I think Penn State probably would have beat him. And so, The offensive deal, like, ton of credit to Kirk Ferentz for building an extremely Iowa team. But do I think that they're, and great for them to be ranked where they are. Do I think they're the best team in the Big Ten? No, I think if they lined up against Ohio State, I think Ohio State would beat them.
We'll get chatter on this, Max. And always, I appreciate your time and your work. Your thoughts and where you see Nebraska. I know you get to. You get to see Nebraska, but you're around the country watching other teams play. How would you assess where Nebraska's at after seven games, maybe in comparison to some other teams that you think might be on the level, they might be on the level with?
Yeah, it's been a very fascinating run here over the past few weeks. And obviously, I don't need to tell your listeners that, they know it, but I certainly, after the Illinois game to start it, I sort of figured, like, man, this thing feels kind of doomed here. It just feels like how are they not better at this, at this point in the rebuild, and I'm really I feel like that Oklahoma game on, I've just been so impressed by how competitive this team is. I really have been. And I don't know how it's going to end. I look at that schedule and as always, I think from the start of the season, you say, okay, how did they get to six? And, certainly Nebraska still can't take any of these games for granted at all that are left on the schedule. But they've become a team that's at least fun to watch again and that is playing really competitive teams. And certainly, you look at like Michigan State and say you should have won that one. But at least they're fun to watch. Yeah. Like, as frustrating as the losses are, I'm sure, for everybody, at least it's a very competitive, four-quarter team that does a few things really well. And certainly we're seeing Adrian play at a very high level now, and for all he's been through, that's fantastic to see.
Great stuff. Max, I always appreciate the conversation and your work. Thanks for the time.
Hey, thanks so much.
That's Max Olson from The Athletic. Ask yourself, it's October 14th. Who do you think is the best team in the Big Ten right now? And will they still be the best team in the Big Ten, let's say, 6 weeks from now? Because that would put us into the Black Friday weekend that would include an Iowa-Nebraska in the big game between Michigan and Ohio State. I think Iowa, with the way they played, and it's not for everybody now, but I think at the end of the year, Ohio State, I'm been beating that drum for a couple of weeks. Thing to keep an eye on with Ohio State, as C.J. Stroud is starting to hum along. Ohio State's off this weekend, and then they go to Indiana. Now, Indiana plays Michigan State this weekend, and Indiana is not what we thought they would be. Michael Penix Jr. is not the best quarterback in the Big Ten. But they play at Indiana in a primetime game. Sure, that a game will be sold out. Even with the down year so far for IU, I'm sure it'll be sold out in Bloomington. Now, it might be a lot of Scarlet and Gray fans that are there. Then the following week, Ohio State comes home to play Penn State. And then that opening weekend of November is when Ohio State comes to play at Nebraska. And then they get Purdue, and then they finish with Michigan State at home, and then they go to Michigan. I still think Ohio State will win the East. I don't know the roadmap for if Iowa is unbeaten and gets to Indy. There's no roadmap that says two teams from the East are going to make the playoff. But it could be the two teams out of the Big Ten, if Ohio State runs the table and they're a one-loss team and Iowa runs the table, that the Big Ten is going to get two teams into the playoff, and it'll be the two teams that played in the championship game. We talked earlier about James Franklin and his statement yesterday about Iowa and the way they reacted to the Penn State injuries. And he said, "We don't coach it." Fans were livid, saying, "You faked injuries." Kirk Ferentz said, "Our fans smell the rat." The NCAA can help here. I think I made the same argument after the Indiana-Nebraska game, where in the Indiana-Nebraska game in 2019, it was pretty clear that guys, because of Nebraska's tempo, were going down at interesting moments. And then they'd go to the sidelines, they'd miss that play, and then they'd come right back in. You know the best way to stop all of this? And trying to speculate, is he faking the injury? Or is it a serious injury that you find out after the game that he is out for the rest of the season? Is the NCAA, if somebody comes off the field due to injury, they're out for the remainder of that series. They're not out for the game. They're out for the remainder of that series. So they don't come out for one play, and then they're right back in the game. If they need medical attention, if the trainers have come on the field and they have led the player off the field, why not make him sit out for the rest of the series? Take it out of the hands of everybody going, that guy's faking an injury. And also the hands of the officials that have to make a determination. Just say, guy leaves the game due to an injury, he's out for the rest of the series. If it's on third down, leads to fourth down, that's fine. That's one play. But he's out for the rest of the series. And you would eliminate this stuff that is kind of, it's become... I don't think James Franklin is interested in burying the hatchet here. He was fired up yesterday in defending his program. And I think he's probably also seen LeVar Woods like mimics a player going down on the sidelines. I mean, surely everybody has seen the picture of the Iowa fan that in the stands is faking an injury. Iowa Penn State in Indianapolis in December. You want to see that rematch? You have to pick a side. Are you on Team Franklin or Team Iowa? Again, Iowa's got an interesting game this weekend. Maybe a tricky game. Just Purdue has played them tough. Brohm has gotten Purdue to be in tight ball games with Iowa. Last year was the beginning of the year. That was the COVID schedule. And Iowa, Petrus wasn't good. And I thought Iowa made some mistakes late in that game. But the year before... that result, when Purdue went into Kinnick Stadium and won, that made absolutely no sense, and Purdue has won three of their last four. I think that game could be a tight game. could be a tight game, especially coming off the heels of Penn State. All right, when we come back, we'll get into some emails in the Equitable Bank inbox, which are always welcome to communicate with us there. Gary at 1620thezone.com or Jay Odson at nrgmedia.com. Thoughts on tonight, the big game five between the Giants and the Dodgers. And we've got NFL football tonight, Tampa Bay and Philadelphia. Tom Brady and his thumb. It's actually his finger pointing towards everybody else. I don't care if I'm 44 years old. He is lighting up the NFL right now. What happens tonight when the Bucs take on the Eagles on Thursday night football game, you'll hear right here on The Zone. We're an hour away from fantasy football. Joe Bartle from RotoWire will stop by at 1:30, so get in your questions into the Equitable Bank inbox where they take banking personally on 1620 The Zone.